So what exactly did your mama teach you about love and relationships? Hey sis, I'm Candace, and let me tell you, I have been where you are. For years, I was unclear about my love life and trying to achieve someone else's idea of love. My families, the churches, the millions of romance novels that I read through high school, none of which got me to anywhere but unhappy with my love life. But guess what? I broke free from that cycle and created a love life that loves me back. And now I am here to guide you to do the same. So today I want you to join me on a journey from feeling disappointed in your relationship history to madly in love, from broken and guarded to whole and happy. It took abuse, grief, and homelessness for me to learn how to let go of control and be guided and transform my love life. And because I want to save you from as much of that heartbreak as I can and get you to the good part, I became a relationship coach and a hypnotherapist, and I've helped thousands of women like you rewrite their love stories as well. So together, we'll shake off the chains of perfection and not enoughness and embrace the loving relationships that we truly deserve. Alongside some incredible guests this season on my podcast, we'll share stories of resilience, unveil secrets to unconditional self-acceptance, and chart a course to relationships that will bring you ease, peace, and joy. And I'm here every week, so don't just listen. I want you to comment, engage, and be part of the conversation. Your voice matters, and we're building a community of empowered, vibrant women of color and culture rewriting our love stories together. All right, so let's get started. I want to introduce you to my guest. Her name is Arlene Washburn, and she's recognized as the most innovative woman in matchmaking in 2022. And she has a name that resonates with love and connection and groundbreaking matchmaking. She is a renowned matchmaker, a relationship expert, and an innovator in her field. She's also a science-based dating and relationship coach with a remarkable ability to bring people together and a profound understanding of human nature. Arlene has dedicated her life to helping individuals find their ideal partners. Her exceptional talents and unwavering commitment to love have earned her a well-deserved reputation within the matchmaking community and as one of the most sought-after troubleshooters for matchmaking companies. So after cracking the code to her relationship bliss, Arlene is happily married and on a mission to help others achieve their relationship goals through her boutique matchmaking company, AV Connections, and her Get Real, Get Love coaching platform. I'm so excited to talk with her today. I just met her this week. We hit it off right away. We're so very aligned. I'm going to bring Arlene on camera. Arlene, hello, beautiful lady.
Hi, Candace. It's so great to be with you.
I'm so glad that you could be here, that you were willing to take the time. I'm honored to have you, and I can't wait till we like deep dive into this conversation.
Well, thank you for having me. Any opportunity to help our community, women of color, I am all for it. So yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that we're aligned in the way that we are. I feel like it's like as soon as you figure out something in life and, as you know, I think the way you said crack the code, it's like you want to bring people along, right? It's like I want more people around me who have actually gotten to a point where they feel this thing, because it's that like-mindedness that I think provides us support for each other, right?
Absolutely. I am one of those people that if I have something amazing happening, I want everybody to have it. I feel Absolutely. Like there's enough to go around, and it's sort of my mission in life to help people achieve their relationship goals, because it took me a while to get there and I didn't have the background from my mother or anyone to really give me the tools. And that's what kind of took me into this industry. And I haven't looked back.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned that, the background from your mother, because that's our theme today, right? Love life lessons from your mama.
Yep.
We're going to be talking about that today. I want people to walk away today with a real understanding of, not only what they got, because I think sometimes we just sort of unconsciously learn things, and sometimes we are very conscious of it and we might still have feelings around it and it can be very self-sabotaging. But I want people to walk away from our conversation today with a real understanding of how to sort of take their own rite of passage and really get connected to what it is they want and they need, regardless of whatever was taught or not taught to them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know to this day who are grown women who are still blaming their parents for things. At some point, you have to have agency and take things into your own hands and really take a good look inside of yourself, figure out what are those things that you believe, and change what's not, you know, supporting your goals. And really, that was something that I had to do. Because obviously parents love you and they're trying to bolster you, and they're sharing anecdotal advice that's not necessarily healthy.
Yeah.
And it creates this belief system in you that you're brought in, you know, that you carry forever, right? Because a lot of people don't really look at their belief system. Yeah. And I like to say, I like to spring clean my belief system every year. Right?
Because sometimes they just get old and musty, right? These
yeah.
beliefs that we espouse. Yeah.
If your beliefs are not, like, if you're not having success in something, you need to look at what do you believe?
Yeah.
What are you saying and what are you doing? Because those three things are always congruent. So if things aren't going your way, take responsibility for it. Nothing's happening to you. It is happening for you. There's some lessons to learn. There's some tweaks that need to be made. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you, because I hate when people wrong themselves to death, or, you know, they should this, you know, they'll say, I should do this and I should that. And I'm like, you should all over yourself. Just take a look, take a pause, and let's tweak what needs to be tweaked and go forward from there.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that. So to start out, I do kind of want, I always feel like it's good to give an example of what is the issue, or what is the problem, what is the topic, right? So I want to talk a little bit about the distinction, first of all, between what our mothers tell us and what they show us, because I believe that we do what they do, not so much what they say, but what they say does have an influence, right? And so I came up with a few of, like, you know, some things my mom told me, or the clients have told me that their mothers told them, and some things that they modeled for them. Do you have some that, like, immediately come to mind, like some things that you know your mother told you that you sort of, like, either disagreed with or thought was crazy? Or,
well, actually, there's a lot that you embrace as a child when you don't really know better, right? Yeah. So my mom ended up a single mom, because my dad, who was a cheater his whole life, eventually left. Mm-hmm. And so she felt that you needed to be a very independent woman, that you couldn't rely on men, and that you couldn't trust men, because that was her experience, right? Mm-hmm. And so the way she wanted to use her experience to help bolster us was to tell us, don't trust any men, be independent, and just rely on yourself. And that wasn't really healthy, because she was going off of her own trauma to then try to help us avoid her trauma. And what she did was the complete opposite, right?
Yeah.
So now you grow up a woman who wants to connect with a man, if you're a heterosexual woman, but you feel like, oh, I can't trust them. I can't depend on them. I'm Little Miss Independent over here. I don't need a man. That was the whole thing, right? And people constantly say these things. But it took time, you know, after learning this craft and really getting deep into the science and the research and all of it, for me to realize that that's not the answer. That's not the way to go about it. It doesn't mean that you're going to remove your independence. It doesn't mean that you don't have your own thinking and all of that. But this idea of, like, oh, I don't need a man. Well, you know what? If I want to have a husband, if I want to take walks on the beach with my significant other holding hands, or anything, you know, if I want to get married and have children, I need a man for that. So just because you need something to accomplish something doesn't make you needy. That's a huge difference. And I think people equate that. So that's an example of where a parent is really trying to do the right thing by you, because they're trying to avoid the challenges for you. But what they're doing is really, you know, pretty much throwing their trauma onto you. And then you go through life with this kind of thinking.
Yeah. And I think that's also how it continues on generation after generation, right? Because you don't break the cycle if you're unknowingly just going by what you were warned.
Yeah.
Right, based on someone else's past experiences. And we don't know, like, where it even begins. So, you know, I know that a lot of the things my mother told me were things that her mother told her that were based on, you know, maybe my great-grandmother's experience or my great-great-grandmother's experience. And it just, you know, has moved through the generations in that way. One of the things my mom used to always tell us was that boys were gross, and she's just glad she didn't have any. And it sounds so silly. Like, when you're a kid, you're like, you grow up, they're just gross. But that's something that as an adult you take with you. Like, you know, there is a difference between how men live and how women live a lot of times. Not to genderize everybody, not to be binary about it. But I grew up with this sense that they're just disgusting people. Mm-hmm. Right? And that in itself is something that, you know, in my young dating life, you know, when you're young, everybody's beautiful. So, of course, you're attracted to each other and things like that. But it's something that, you know, it has you be a certain way with people when you have a bias already built in, right? You might not be as tolerant. You might not be as patient. And sometimes it's something as minimal, I think, as that. And something as big as, like what you were saying, don't trust them. They all cheat. They'll only use you. Another one she used to tell us, men only use you.
Yeah.
You know, that you are meant to be used. Not meant to be, that it's okay, but that's how they think, you know, which I had to discover that that's not the case.
And the funny thing about this, Candace, is that, you know, I've interviewed women into their 70s, and we think that some of this ridiculousness sounds funny and cute because you're a little kid, oh, men are gross. But the reality is that your mind doesn't know better.
Yeah.
Excuse me. They don't, you know, as you grow up, if you have an installed belief that has been entrenched into you, like it's part of your being, it's not as easy to remove. And I know you're a hypnotherapist. That's a great way to remove certain belief systems, right? But the reality is if you don't make an active effort to remove the belief systems that are not supporting you, because you accepted these things when you were 0 to 8, right? We're like little sponges, and we're just taking it all in, and we don't really question it. We just accept. You do continue this mindset for your whole life, and it doesn't serve you. And the challenge with that is that then you get the next message of, well, if you want to maintain a marriage, you need to please your husband. Yeah. It's like, they're gross, but you gotta
please you.
You know, so there's all this mixed messaging that goes on because, you know, it's not meant to hurt you in any way. It's just the parents are trying to speak to you in a way that they think you might understand. Oh, they're gross. You know, and I'm using that as an example, but all of it is really trying to help you, but they don't know better. And I really am a big believer of that language matters.
Yeah.
And meaning of words matter. And I think it's really important if you are a mother to be very mindful and careful the way you speak to your children, because this stuff sinks in and then, you know, it's very challenging.
Yeah. We call that like genesis of identity. Like if I'm told something as a child, or if I experience something as a child and I tell myself something to survive it, I could be 45 years old, you know, acting out certain behaviors or being a certain way or feeling a certain way because that's what I told myself. So the 5-year-old is still running the show.
Yeah.
No, I love that stuff. So then modeled for you, because I think that I agree with you, words matter. And I do think that words create. And like they form our beliefs. And then I think as children, there's also the modeling that happens. So what I find with a lot of clients is that, you know, I saw my mother go through whatever she went through, and I'm basically just reliving her story, or I'm trying to heal her story. I'm trying to do it better than she did it. I'm trying to either be like her, but not have what she had, or do everything I can to not be like her. And I think all of that comes from, you know, produces the same results, like that same sort of, you know, survival thoughts. But all of that comes from what I saw.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to what was said to me. And I think because you're in the position of being both daughter and mother, tell me like some examples for you of where you see the modeling, like what you feel you modeled or what you maybe see in your daughter.
Yeah. The modeling is huge because, to your point, people will either emulate or swing the pendulum. It's never a moderate, you know, like, oh, let me modulate this behavior to something that makes sense. No, let me go in the opposite direction and swing the pendulum. And extremes are never, well, I shouldn't say never, I hate words like that, but are usually not healthy, right? So there's usually a healthy balance of things. And my mom while she talked a good game about independence and all of that, and yes, there were, she was an immigrant in the U.S., raising two daughters on her own with no support, there was always this damsel in distress kind of personality and behavior. And then I stepped up as the even though I'm the youngest of two, I was the one in charge. In our household, I was always in charge. I made all the decisions from the age of 12 and on. And, you know, that was very challenging because, A, I swung the pendulum to, like, be large and in charge because my mom was the damsel in distress. Yeah. But then what I did, I have a 35-year-old daughter, and because I didn't want her to be burdened with growing up too fast or having to make decisions when she didn't need to, I made all the decisions for her. Yeah. So you're not going to have any responsibility. I will decide for you. And what did I, you know, you create an insecure child when you basically make them believe that they're not capable of making their own decisions. Yeah. So it took me a while to take a step back and say, wait a second. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this. Let me work on not continuing this and, you know, digging myself out of that hole, because I have this amazing daughter who literally could be a member of Mensa. She's freaking brilliant. But I was always trying to make the decisions for her only because I didn't want her to live the life that I lived of having to make every decision. So everything that goes on, what we call this generational trauma and behavior and beliefs and all of that, it just continues and it just goes back and forth between two extremes. Yeah. Where a lot of this can be avoided. And the other thing I like to say, when I work with women who are single moms, they often talk about their kids and all this stuff. And I always say, the best thing you can do for your child is to allow them to see you in a healthy relationship before they leave your household. Yeah. You know, people think, well, I'm just going to stay in this horrible marriage. So that I'm not enough. That was me. I'm going to stay in this terrible marriage of almost 17 years in a very dysfunctional situation that my daughter has to experience. Yeah. And but at least I won't be another statistic, you know, with divorce, mom, having kids from multiple, you know, husbands. I had all these ideas in my head. So I'm just going to hang in there, even though it was not a good environment for a kid. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the minute I was able to get out of that, get into a healthy marriage now of over 12 years, my daughter's life changed completely just by witnessing what I was doing and not so much what I'm saying. So it's very important to model for your kids. And it's important to have a healthy relationship that they can see, not on TV, but in their own household, so that then they can go out and model that.
Yeah, no, I love that. Absolutely. And I think too, it's like, you know, we sort of get ourselves into this place where, you know, we're in that story of right and wrong. And I think part of the reason that people often do stay in something or, you know, refuse to make the moves that they could make in order to be able to model healthy relationships for their children is because there's this idea that I'm not doing it right if I'm not doing it how society told me to do it, or if I'm not doing it how my parents did it or how I was trained to do it. And I think it goes back to, you know, just being able to have that understanding that I can choose what it is that I need in my love life, and I can create that with someone who's a engaged partner, right? If I think that I got to do what someone else says I had to do, if I got to do it the way that it was set up for me, the way society says that I have to do it, and then I'm unhappy with it, I get myself sort of stuck in a place where it's like I'm caught between not doing the right thing and, you know, not actually doing the right thing, which is taking care of myself. I feel like there's no better modeling for any child or anyone in your life than taking good care of yourself.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I think the step one, and I'm sure you can relate as a love coach, when we work with clients, is really honing in on who they are and what matters to them and what is authentic to them, because we're so entrenched in all these shoulds and coulds and woulds and, you know, what religion tells you, what society tells you, all of that. And there's so many unhappy people that A, are either not in relationships because they're not perfect based on this idea of what it has been dictated to you, or they stay in unhealthy relationships because of that, as I did. So I think it's really, really important to hone in on who you are, what matters to you, and then choose a partner that's going to be in alignment with you. And it doesn't mean that you're both going to be perfectly the same, but birds of a feather flock together. And this idea that opposites attract, that might be exciting in the beginning, but over time, that's not going to work. And I'm not talking about looks. Yeah. I'm not talking about, you know, those types of things. I'm really talking about your core values, your key life values, the things that really matter to you, your life goals, your lifestyle, all of that. When you have that kind of an alignment, you're more likely to have a successful long-term relationship. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's really important to get to know yourself first and foremost.
Yeah. So I think that that's, you know, why it's important. The reason that I usually tend to point at mothers, because, you know, the old adage is that it's the opposite sex parent that teaches you how to be in relationship with, you know, assuming that you're straight, or it's the parent that, you know, whose gender you'd be attracted to that teaches you how to be in relationship. And I do think that that's a very pivotal and important relationship. Like, I definitely think that if you're, you know, a hetero, identifying female who wants to date men, that your father has a big influence on the type of men that you choose, because I think that we get comfortable with certain things, right? Even if it's not something that's really workable, we're comfortable with it. It's familial, it's familiar. But I think that when it comes to the mother-daughter relationship in particular, because I can't speak obviously to the father-son relationship in the same way, when it comes to that relationship in particular, that there's that difficulty between wanting to be loyal and it's your mother, and that symbiosis that you feel because it's your mother, and also being able to look at what about her and about her choices is unworkable for us, mm-hmm. without having to either villainize her or make her wrong. And so then for some of us, that causes a lot of guilt. If we say the things that she did didn't work. And for some of us, it causes us to, you know, have a lot of resentments or things that we don't want to forgive. And a lot of my conversation is around forgiveness and things like that. What are some things that you teach when you're coaching or even when you're guiding someone in the matchmaking process around that, being able to understand your mother-daughter relationship and how your mother affects you and still have a healthy love life? I know that's a lot to tackle, but
it's a lot, and it is major in people's lives. But the simple answer is compassion, mm-hmm. validation, and curiosity, right? Because people, they are who they are because of where they came from, and mm-hmm. most of us are really genuinely trying to do the best we can with what we know and what we, you know, however possible, right? And so often the harm, psychological or otherwise, that comes from parents is not intended most of the time. There are times that, yes, you know, children are abused and things like that. That's a different thing. But when I look back at my mom's life and, you know, what she's gone through, I have a lot of compassion for it. And I have a lot of curiosity, and I try to understand her. And I recognize that we're separate entities. Yes. So from the mother's perspective and the child perspective, we have to understand that we are separate entities. We're separate humans, that we're not, you know, you're responsible for your kids up to a point, and then they need to grow up and be independent adults. Mm-hmm. And likewise. So yes, the family unit is super important. I'm very much into, you know, I'm a family oriented person, but also you are your own person, and you need to really figure out who you need to be, and just forgive, validate, understand, be curious about, and have compassion for people's life experience, because that's where most of the hurt that, and you know, the things that they might say that's not ideal, that's where it's coming from. Yeah. And if you can get your mind around that, I know it's a lot, but that's how people need to handle that. Otherwise, you're just going to carry that. You're going to carry the resentment, the hurt, the pain, the anger. And all you're doing is hurting yourself, really. Yeah. Right? Because people, you know, are living in your head rent-free, basically.
Yeah, no, it's true. And that's the thing, too. A lot of it comes from this expectation that we have when it comes to mothers. Right, this expectation that as soon as a woman becomes a mother, she is supposed to be up here in some angelic, like, perfect place, and she's supposed to do everything right and know how to nurture and know how to do every, you know, step and react in a way that's perfect for every happening, every change, every transition in life. I think that a lot of the resentment comes from, you know, this Norman Rockwell painting that we're trying to live into. This, like, you know, I know for me, like, especially when I was in my, let's say my 20s, early 30s, a lot of my disenchantment, disappointment, and, you know, feelings I had when it came to my mother were just this expectation that she was supposed to be better, whatever better meant, that she was supposed to be some sort of, you know, example of a mother that was beyond reproach. Now, I will say that in a lot of ways, she presented herself in that way because that's what she was taught to do. Like, you know, her mother taught her, you have to, even though her mother was not like, you know, I knew my grandmother pretty well. My grandmother was very like balls to the walls. Like she, you know, was out there being herself, but she had an expectation that everybody be perfect, you know, or do things right. Or she'd talk about you bad if you didn't. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, how that's generational. I think that's one thing too, is like being able to look at this anger or this resentment I may have for my mother, or this anger or resentment I have because she didn't know how to mother me in my mind, comes from my expectation mm-hmm. that there's some perfection.
Yeah. The life-changing thought process in my life was when I decided the word expectation is no longer in my vocabulary. Yeah. And it kind of comes from, the word expecting is just essentially means sitting and waiting, and you know that something's going to happen, even though you haven't communicated about it, you haven't negotiated about it. So I always like to replace the word expectation, especially in relationships, to communications and negotiations. And when I say relationships, it's not just romantic relationships, it's with everything. Yeah. So rather than hoping and waiting for something to happen, having a conversation with someone about it, asking with curiosity, with deep curiosity, because there's also this issue of people wanting to be right and wrong.
Yeah.
And the point of communication is not for being right and wrong, it's to get to agreement. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that is agreeing to disagree, because I can't force you to think the way I think. So if I have a thought in my head that I believe this is the way it should be or whatever, you don't have to be on board with that. You can hear me, you can validate and, you know, acknowledge what I'm saying. Doesn't mean you have to take it in, and same with me, right? But having these conversations and negotiations about how you're going to do things is really important in every relationship, but it's particularly important in romantic relationships, because instead of thinking, well, this is what my people do, this is how we do things, no, what do you need to do? Like, we're modern, we're traditional. That means nothing. You have to sit with your spouse or your significant other and work through what, you know, what makes sense here. You have more time. You love to cook. Sure, you know, the woman doesn't have to cook. The man could cook. You know, like someone might like to clean, or the other one makes more money. It doesn't matter. Yeah. There's no hard, fast rule. And unfortunately, because people are going off of these rules that they've been taught, and they're not happy because they keep meeting people, but they can't really pigeonhole themselves into those rules. So it's all about communication and negotiation in all relationships. There's no traditional or modern. There's just, what's your relationship like? What does that look like? What works for you? And are you too happy? Great. Consenting adults, go for it.
Yeah. And it, coming from that self note, like if I know myself, then I can work it out with you. Right? Right. And I feel like too, there's sort of a shift that's happening, you know, like I work mainly with elder millennials, like middle millennial aged women. And, you know, the shift that I see happening that I think is good is that there is an understanding that I'm better off alone than in a bad relationship, number one, which I don't necessarily think that, you know, I'm Gen X. I don't necessarily think that women of our generation and further were given that. But also just that I can create something with somebody, right? Mm-hmm. That I don't have to play by those old rules. Now, I think the thing with that though, is that we skate a very fine line, because in as much as I totally agree with you around, you know, creating it how you want it to be, even your gender roles within your relationship, I also think there are certain things that are still, they just hold true.
Hey, sis, I know you. You want to attract a partner who genuinely loves you as a woman. You want to break generational cycles and experience the fulfilling romantic relationships that your mother and maybe even your grandmother didn't have. You want to learn how to release the pattern of navigating your love life through past hurts, trauma, and abandonment issues. So I've made this easy-to-consume, effective digital course just for you. It's called A Love Life That Loves You Back. I'm Candace Harper, a relationship coach and hypnotherapist, and I would love to help you create that love life. Just go to bit.ly/lovingrelationships for WOC. Can't wait to see you
there. Right, like, because I know I'm walking a fine line here, but like a lot of times women talk about, I had a client somewhat recently, I think we completed about a month ago, and her whole thing was that she wanted a partner, a man who was you know, very self-possessed and, you know, had all his stuff together and wanted to be somewhat of a leader in the relationship, which I think, you know, that's the dynamic she wanted. But yet she was out there, like, you know, she would go out with her friends, try to see how many numbers she could get, calling guys, you know, going after them, chasing them, and experiencing a lot of rejection, like sort of being the instigator, the one who, you know, was trying to make the relationships happen. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that there's something to be said for, you don't have to go by traditional roles, but in knowing what it is that you are going for, you don't want to be in conflict, right? If you are going for tradition, but you're trying to be this, you know, like you were saying, hyper-independent or independent woman, but you want tradition, which I think that conflict comes up a lot. Do you feel like you experienced that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest conflict is the overarching labels that we put on things. Because when we talk about traditional and modern, it means different things to different people. And when we talk about the man leads, the woman follows, she's submissive, these are all words that don't mean anything unless you've had a conversation about what it means to you. But my thing is a true leader leads by example and also leads by listening and getting buy-in. And so studies show that men who allow themselves to be influenced by women, or the women in their lives, they're way happier than the men who don't, right? Yeah. So this idea of a man leading, it's not that I don't have an issue with that. And there's plenty of things that my husband is responsible for in our household, right? Or in general. But I don't look at it as, oh, he leads me and I follow and I'm submissive. Yeah. We're partners. We're true partners. We collaborate. When we have issues, we both roll up our sleeves and say, okay, how are we going to solve this problem? Whether it's a relationship issue or just anything happening in our home. So I think that coming at it from that perspective, because oftentimes the two people coming together, especially if you're a single woman, a single man, you already have a woman who is independent, who's paying her own bills, hypothetically, right? Doing all the things, managing her life. She's in charge of her life. You're a man who's doing the same. Coming together and then putting a lot of burden on one person to now handle all of this, it's just not fair. That's why you want two whole people to come together and decide what works for them. I'm not down on any traditions if that's what people want, but I encourage you to have a conversation about what that means to you and what that means to him, because you're going to find a lot of conflict if you don't figure that out.
Yeah.
And a perfect example of that is I've always been very, you know, driven, and I have my own business. I was in the corporate world for 20 years and the pharmaceutical as an executive. Mm-hmm. And my daughter saw that. And of course, she swung the pendulum. Now, she's 100 times smarter than me, like could be a member of Mensa, like brilliant, brilliant mind, can do anything. And her goal in life was to get married and be a housewife and have her child and raise her child. And I don't put that down in any way, because let me tell you, that is a lot of work. That's exactly what she did. And she negotiated that with her husband, her now husband, up front. Like, they had discussions about this. Mm-hmm. And she says, look, I'm not a career woman. I really want to raise my child. She's even thinking of homeschooling. Mm-hmm. I want to be a housewife. I want to take care of my home, my children, and my husband, and that's the life I want to live. And if something changes later on, you know, because these negotiations are not forever, okay? You have to come back to the negotiation table often. And that's what she did. And I admire her for it. Yeah. I couldn't do that. I just, that wasn't me.
Not your thing. And I think that speaks to that alignment. Like, she did that, she knew what she wanted, and she acted in accordance with it.
Yeah.
Right? Which I think is more important than anything. Like beyond trying to fit into someone else's rules, it's I know what I want, and I act in accordance with that. I know what energy I need in my relationship, and I act in accordance with that. But I think sometimes, you know, we struggle with, and I've struggled with it, you know, in past relationships, is that acting in accordance with it means being a no to what's not in accordance with it, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to discern. And by discern, I don't mean, you know, that sort of judging somebody in a million different ways the moment you see them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about alignment, right? Like, you're great, but you're just not aligned with the energy that I'm looking to create. When you know that,
yeah,
you know, you're able to say that and then be able to, like your daughter did, attract exactly what it is you want.
I agree. And I think the word no is a complete sentence.
Yeah.
However, there are times where helping people understand your experience, where you're coming from, and why you feel the way you do can get buy-in, where people can say, oh, okay, that makes sense to me. I'm on board with that. And I think having the finesse to, because when we talk, that's why I like the word negotiations, right? Because negotiation requires a lot of finesse. Mm-hmm. That means that you're communicating without the emotions, mm-hmm, and more to bring clarity into the conversation, where you're speaking your truth. You're not blaming. You're not pointing fingers. You're just saying, this is what works for me and why it works and where I'm coming from. And sometimes people hearing your story can really wrap their head around what you're trying to accomplish, yeah, and say, you know what, I'm on board with that. And I think that's what is lacking in often where there's a lot of conflict in a relationship, is because the man or the woman don't really know how to state their case. They don't know how to express what it is that they need in a way that is not off-putting and that it's not demanding, right? Because you can't demand respect. You have to command respect. And the only way to command respect is to, A, start with respecting others,
yeah,
right? And also, you know, just being a kind of person that can just express how they feel and not make others feel bad about it,
yeah,
if that, yeah, makes any sense.
It does. It does. And I think what you're pointing at is that ability to just come from that place of unapologetically in tune to who I am, and it doesn't have to attach to you.
Right.
You know, I feel like that's one of the pitfalls with dating, especially with the way that it works with apps and things like that. One of the pitfalls with dating is that people just get so attached that it has to be you. And you know, just from the matchmaking world that we were talking earlier about, I had a short stint in the matchmaking world, but you know, you got people investing their money and stuff, and it's this instant attachment, like every match has got to be the one. It's like, you know, people have this sense that, you know, even those who haven't invested money have this sense that if I'm not meeting the one every time, or if I can't, you know, hook myself onto, you know, the rightness of this person for me, that it's a problem, rather than just being sort of peaceful with I'm in tune with myself, mm-hmm, and that person. First of all, you only need one, right? It's like there's so much anger out there that, you know, I'm dating and I've met so many and none of them match. It's like, it's okay.
Yeah, I always say every person you meet brings you closer to the person that is meant for you.
Yes.
However, every person you meet is a significant source of information of what you want, what you don't want. Mm-hmm. And also just being kind, giving people grace, being the kind of dater where everybody wants you without being a chameleon, right? Mm-hmm. Like being yourself, because that's part of the practice too. Like, you know, often people will come to me and they say, I don't want to go on a bunch of dates. I'm tired of dating. I always say to them, well, guess what? I mean, what does dating mean to you? Dating is meeting new people, getting to know them, and assessing whether or not they're right for you. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, you let them go with love and wish them well. But if they are, then you proceed and continue to figure out if that relationship is viable. And you don't, unless you have an arranged marriage, right, where you just meet the person, you know, you're marrying them, that's it.
Yeah.
You're going to have to date. Right. So embrace the idea of dating and look at it as a benefit and as an opportunity rather than being down on it. Because when you come into any scenario, anything you want to do and accomplish in life, and you have a bad attitude towards it, that is going to impede any progress. And then that's on you. That's not on the matchmaker. That's not on the coach. That's not on the man. It's on you. Since we're talking to women, right, that you are choosing to come into something with a bad attitude and your energy's off, your light is off, you have walls up, people feel like you're unapproachable. Like, I mean, you hear this all the time about people and you're trying to pinpoint, what is it about this person? They're unapproachable. Like, they're just, they have these walls up and they have an attitude, and it's that energy. So don't get so caught up on the outcome and focus on being present and taking an opportunity to really learn about someone, to get your dating chops up if that's not the right person for you. And by the way, I always tell women, you go on a date with a guy who's not right for you and he's a great guy, introduce him to another one.
Right?
Out, ladies.
Right? Be the conduit for somebody else.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better to turn a guy down by saying, you know what, I don't think this is a good connection romantically, but I really like you and I have a great friend I would love for you to meet.
Yeah.
Come on. You know how many women would just really benefit from that? But no, right? We have this scarcity mentality that we can't do that because we want to get there before they do, you know? It's like,
yeah, we want to be the one sitting around with the engagement ring with all our single girlfriends in awe. But what I love about how you're describing it too, and I think, you know, that's one thing that it's good to know, is that, you know, a lot of times we walk around like the love life begins when we meet the partner, right? But what you're describing about dating is like all the stuff that you're still doing when you're in a relationship. You're still negotiating. You're still, you know, like you said, you're still finding partnership and, you know, sharing your vision. And, you know, it's like that willingness to, and I think you called it a practice as well. I love calling it a practice. That willingness to practice that, you're practicing for being in a relationship. You know, that idea that it doesn't start until I meet the person is just, you know, so antiquated. I think that that's something that we got from our mothers got from their mothers, and, you know, goes from way back when, you know, back when they used to arrange people and, you know, just put them together and, you know, with some of our ancestry, just breed them, you know, like we're in a very privileged generation where it's like, you know, we get to actually start our love life completely single. Mm-hmm. Right? On your own. You start it with yourself and then start practicing what it means to partner with other people.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's good and bad, right? With great freedom comes great responsibility, and it can be overwhelming. So back in the day when people were being put together with arranged marriages, then you didn't even have to think about it. You knew this is going to be your spouse. You're going to have to make it work because that is it for you, right? Now you have a lot of responsibility to make your own choices and then know where those choices are coming from. Know what, first of all, know yourself, know what you need, what your deal breakers are, and get someone who's in alignment with that. I mean, it's a lot of work, right? Yeah. That's why my industry is growing every day, the matchmaking world, the coaching world, because people need support with this because it's a lot to figure out on your own. But it's doable. It's totally doable. And, you know, if we can get away from these rom-coms where all you think about how to get the guy, and then you get the guy and you're like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Yeah. That's why I love to talk to people about how to be in relationships, because if for me and a lot of women out there, it's easy to get the guy. The harder part begins when you have to put effort into a relationship and know where to put this effort. What are the tools? What are the things you need to be constantly attuned to? Like that, you know, I always say the I don't know where this quote comes from, but the grass is greener where you water it. Right? That's where the relationships are all about. And so, like, I do a lot of things with my husband. You know, we still date each other. We have a lot of fun together. We laugh. We have our rituals. We do a bucket list, a couple's bucket list every year. Yeah. I mean, there's maintenance that to support it, and it's not work. I don't like, that's another word I don't like. Yeah. I don't like work because it makes it hard, and I don't like hard. I like effort. you know, and just having a practice of things that you do with each other so that you can stay connected, stay in alignment, taking walks every day and talking about your goals and your dreams and anything other than clean the house and did you do this and whatever, all that maintenance talk
every day.
That's all I'm talking about, but just constantly reconnecting. Then you don't have situations where, oh, you know, we're getting a divorce because we fell apart.
Yeah. No.
I mean, I've gone through a divorce. My situation was a little different because I had a husband who was an alcoholic, essentially. So that was a tough thing to overcome. And it just, I tried for 17 years. Yeah. But outside of that, we had a great relationship when he was sober, you know? And so that's what I'm saying. Like, really know that the dating is necessary. It doesn't have to be forever. I know there are people dating forever. If you get the skills and the strategies, you can squeeze that time frame down, but learn how to be in a relationship. That way you understand what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, and use the dating to learn. And I know, what was it that you said earlier about, you know, your beliefs, like your beliefs and the word that you put on it. So, like, I feel like a lot of the dating has to do with how we frame it, you know. Yeah. Think of it like, you know, it is labor, it's work, it's hard, you know, that will continue on to when you're in a relationship.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of opportunity in just, you know, like right now I'm dating women I want to interview for this podcast, right? Like, we're on a date on this podcast. It's like, you know, when you think of it, like, I'm making partnerships and, you know, there's serendipity that can come from it. There's things that I get to learn. There's opportunities. Even, you know, if I meet someone and we don't get along that well, I get to learn something, right? Like, none of it wasted.
Yeah. And learning from someone that, let's say, you don't get along with, it gives you a lot of opportunity to discover, okay, what is it about that person that maybe is in me that bothers me about me? Okay, because that could be the case. I'm not trying to shame anybody into anything, but often we get triggered by things that we see in ourselves. Or am I being compassionate enough? Am I, you know, there's a lot of different things that you can learn about yourself and improve how you go through life with to have ease, right? Rather than feeling, oh, I can't stand this person. They are who they are, and just have that ease. But in order to get to that place, it's important to sort of always be making internal checks. Why am I feeling this way? Right? Because, I mean, we're a work in progress until the day we die. So this is a constant thing. It's never going to go away, but it's a good thing, and it can be a fun thing if you allow it to be that way.
Yeah, I totally agree with that too. I mean, I know for myself, that's one thing that, you know, I don't practice in regret, but I think about it, there's anything that I would have wanted to know at like in my early 20s, is that life's, and it's teaching me something, like that it's not, there's nothing wrong because it doesn't go the way that I want it to go. It's not a bad thing that things, you know, are a surprise, or I don't get the things that I think I need to be getting, or that it's not looking exactly how I think it should look. Like, that's our journey. That's what we're here for, is to learn those lessons and to play and enjoy and also feel pain, the whole gamut of emotions. Like, if that's something that I understood probably in my early 20s, I would have saved myself
a lot of heartache, right?
Right? A lot of heartache.
I agree. I mean, and I agree wholeheartedly and feel the same way. And now, as I go through life and things don't go in a way that I thought they would, I'm like, oh, okay, this is a different avenue. And there's always the opportunity to just stop and look at whatever the situation is and say, okay, what can I do differently? Or how can, because it's not, you know, I always say to women, let's say if I'm coaching someone or even coaching someone in a relationship where she's getting the coaching, I always say it's not that everything's on you, but you're only responsible for yourself.
Yeah.
And how you behave, how you respond, and then that will have an effect on others. So take everything that you can do for yourself and take responsibility for as much as you can for yourself, that the things that you can control. Anything that you're trying to control that's out of your control is a complete waste of time. Mm. Worrying is a complete waste of time. I always say people who worry suffer twice. Yeah. Because you suffer when you're worrying, and then you suffer when if it actually happens.
It happens.
Why would you put yourself through that? You know, I'm not a masochist, so I don't need that. I'll suffer when I have to suffer. And even still, there are so many people that have these traumatic experiences that they go through, and they turn that pain into purpose. Mm. It sets them up for life on a path to writing books, doing talks, and you just never know. So everything that happens in your life, just be curious and allow and look at it and say, what can I learn from this? Yeah. And it's just an easier way to live life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. So I have some questions that I always like to ask my guests, or, you know, some form of those questions. And, you know, just to get like a personal sort of pulse, and, you know, to share with other women, women who might be listening, you know, what's possible around how we navigate our relationships with ourselves, our relationships with others, and particularly as women of color. So tell me something, Arlene, about being a woman of color. What is your favorite thing about it? What do you embrace about it? And as it pertains to your love life?
Well, on a very generic level, I'm not a sun lover. So I love not having my all year round tan. That's why I get to be 57, and a lot of people tell me I look a lot younger.
You do, definitely.
So I stay out of the sun. But I think that we are highly desirable.
Yeah.
Men love us.
Yeah.
And I was so pissed off years ago when they had this study online where they were saying that women of color were the least desirable. Mm-hmm. There were so many things that were askew in that survey. Mm-hmm. And I remember so many women coming to me, women of color, and regurgitating that garbage to me. And I'm like, oh, you know, we're supposedly the worst, you know, the people. That's not true. People, mm-hmm. So get that idea out of your head, okay? Mm-hmm. We are highly desirable. Men love us, all kinds of men, not right. just black men, not just men of color, because that's another thing. I think often, like I have a sister, and she's like, you know, she would never date anybody who wasn't a person of color. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you can have love wherever you find it, that's okay. Yeah. There are a lot of men that love you no matter what. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter where they came from. So yeah, I've always been proud of who I am. I am very confident. I was born that way, but I also was bred to be that way by the mother who had me make all the decisions. So I had to be confident in my decisions. Mm-hmm. And I don't apologize for who I am. When I was in the pharmaceutical industry, I'd walk in. Number one, I looked younger. Number one, I was a person of color. And immediately they thought I was the temp, the receptionist, or something like that. And then when they met me and talked to me and then found out that I was the senior director, you know, I used to love that.
Yeah.
Like, go ahead and underestimate me.
Right.
So yeah, so there's so many things. My husband adores me. He's a white man. He yeah. loves me. He loves women of color. Yeah. every time he compliments somebody on TV, you know, he's blonde hair, blue eyes. He's like, oh wow, she's really beautiful. We're yeah. watching Suits. Uh-huh. And he's talking about the women. He doesn't make, you know, he doesn't compliment any of the other women, just the main character and Meghan Markle, right? So I just want all women of color to just embrace their beauty, who they are, what you bring, your culture, all of it. And just be free. And if somebody loves you for who you are, it doesn't matter what they look like. As long as you feel happy with that person, go for it.
Yeah. And I love that you made the distinction that men find women of color desirable. And I want to point that out, because that has to do with emotional intelligence. Men, grown men who are emotionally intelligent. I'm not saying that they only prefer women of color, but they don't use race or color or generalizations as their litmus for whether a woman is right for them or not.
Right.
They look for that core value alignment, that physical attraction, that lifestyle alignment. Like, that's what men are looking for. So as women of color, I don't think we have to worry about anyone who says that they're not attracted to us. Cause it's like, if you're not attracted to me cause I'm brown, like you're not even on my radar.
Exactly.
I don't even think of you as a full grown man. Like you have a mental illness and you should go on and figure that out.
and it doesn't matter what shade of color either. Yeah. I know there's a lot of colorism in our own cultures. And I'm telling you, every woman of color is beautiful. I don't care what shade of you know, brown you are. There's so many beautiful women. And it's not just traditional, like, your look. It's who you are intrinsically, because I can't tell you how many beautiful people I've encountered in my life who were just, you can't even have a conversation with them. They're not attractive because there's something going on, like they think they're better than anybody or whatever. That's so off-putting. It's what's going on inside of you that really speaks and connects with others, not so much just your looks.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some things right now that you are currently embracing in your life?
Change okay. is constant and necessary. And I think a lot of people learned this during COVID, and, you know, where they had to pivot their business and I don't even like to use the word survive, but to just sort of, you have to be nimble in life on all levels and be open to change. If you have a very fixed mindset, you go through life a lot in a harder way. Just be at ease, and flow is when you're going with the current and not trying to swim upstream, right? And so a lot of changes are happening right now in my business, in general, and I love it. I love change, and I'm embracing it, and I'm going with it, and it feels good. And I think it works for me, and I think a lot of people struggle with it. So that's the thing that I'm really, really focused on right now.
That's fantastic. I love it. Arlene, I'm so happy that you came on the show. I want us to give, like, sort of final takeaways, something that we want people to walk away from this conversation. What is something you feel like is one of the most important things you want people to walk away from this conversation knowing?
I think the most important thing that I can tell everyone, men, women, doesn't matter, is to get in touch with who you really are and why you are the way you are, and release beliefs that don't serve you. And it is a process. I have, and I mentioned this to you, Candace, I have some exercises that I put people through, because often when you talk about core values, and I know a lot of coaches talk about this, people are like, what's a core value? I don't even, or what's my core value? I have no idea. And so this is an area that I like to work with people, because once you establish your core values, then you go through life constantly using that as your filtering system. Does this align with my core values? Nope. Boom. Easy decision. Not doing it.
Yeah.
It aligns. Great. I'll do this.
North Star. This person,
you know what I mean? That's your North Star. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's your GPS right there. So once you can get in touch with that, it is life-changing. And that means core values and your key life values, which is about 5 or 7 things that most people want to determine about themselves, so that they can then decide, okay, does this person align with that? And those are things like your finances, you know, your outlook towards finances, your outlook towards work and career, health and fitness, just a number. There's about 7 things, and these days a little bit of politics, if it's very important to you, because right? Politics is now kind of, attached to core values. But if you can figure these things out for yourself, you now have the guide, like your GPS, like this is your coordinate. You're starting here, and wherever you want to go, you just have to say, this is where I want to go. And you know, right? Because if you don't even know where you are and you want to get somewhere, how the heck do you do that? How do you put those coordinates in? So that's the key thing that I would want to leave everyone with.
I love that. It's like a consciously creating of your rite of passage. It's like understanding, you know, how do I be my own individual self? Is what I'm hearing and what you're saying, and just get in touch with all of those things. Like, you know, like you said, core value. I talk about core values all the time. It's like my captain. It's like my favorite thing, because it is. It's your guide. It's your North Star. And I think that too, just allowing ourselves to, when we are single, explore singlehood rather than think of it as some sort of, like, you know, prison sentence or some sort of state you're in or some sort of, like, you know, negative place to be.
Yeah.
You know, or you know, that being single or being called single is a pejorative. Like, no, it's a stage in life that is very, very valuable to do exactly what you were talking about.
Yes. Often people who are single or take time away on their own when they're not in, you know, they had a relationship that didn't work out. If they waste that time, and don't use that valuable time to get back in touch with themselves, to have fun, to connect with new people, to get to know themselves more, all the things, then that's where it's not ideal, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're a person who is single and you don't want to be single, then it's important to work through these things so that then you can choose the right partner. But I'm going to say this, and this is a recent study, and it's kind of worldwide, but I think most of it in the UK, most of the people were in the UK. They did a study about who are the happiest people in the world right now. Mm-hmm. And single women are number one, but mm-hmm. not just any single woman, right? Single women one, married men two, mm. married women three.
Wow.
Why? Because the people who are not doing this, putting this effort into getting to know themselves, choosing the right partner that is in alignment, they're in miserable relationships,
yeah.
or, you know, there's a lot of effort that goes into being in a relationship. I always like to talk to people about that. If you're single right now and you're enjoying your life, you're having fun, the first question you want to ask yourself, if you are ready, you think you're ready to be in a relationship, is, are you ready to care for someone else mm. other than yourself?
Yeah.
Because people want relationships because they want this and I want that and I want. But there's a lot of giving, effort. And if you're not up for that, that's perfectly cool. But just know that that's where you're at and enjoy it.
Yeah. I think I can't remember who said it, but that love is about filling yourself up and then overflowing. And I always say, like, if you really feel like you want to be in a relationship, you have to know that you're ready to pour into someone. Like that you have filled yourself up and you're ready to pour in, because the only way you're going to experience that thing that you think that you want is if you're able to pour it out, right?
Yes. And it's not painful. Don't get me wrong.
Right?
Like all the stuff that I do for my husband, I do lovingly and willingly because we have a good relationship. So it's not like it hurts me, but there are people who are not up for that. And that's cool. Just know who you are and where you're at in life and be okay with that, because then you can go through life with ease.
Yeah,
there's a time for everything.
I love it. All right. So tell us, who do you specifically work with? Who are you looking to work with? I know that you mentioned, mention it again. How do you want people to find you?
Well, the best, I actually have a gift for your audience. For anyone who's interested, they can go to member.getrealgetlove.com/Candace. Okay. I'm going to give them access to these exercises that I was referring to get to the bottom of what is their core value and their key life values, so that they have a framework to work off of to be in a healthy relationship. But I work with, I wear many hats. I'm very, so there's two major arms. I work with singles and people in relationships to help them navigate, both as a matchmaker and as a science-based dating and relationship coach. But I also have been training other love industry professionals for many years. I'm the former CEO of the only state licensed school for matchmaking, and there's coaching involved. So since I stepped down from that position, I have started up doing, masterminds for matchmakers and stuff like that who are trying to grow their business. So I look at all of it as living my mission of helping singles achieve their relationship goals. And I do it through my practice and also through helping other matchmakers and love industry professionals to get there, because then I can have a bigger effect. I'm all about legacy is one of my core values.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So I will definitely later on, I'll definitely put the link up. Definitely reach out to Arlene, because if you're looking to become a matchmaker, she can tell you exactly how to do that. If you need help with training your matchmakers or getting them together, you can help with that as well. And you said you also still do some one-on-one, you do premium coaching sometimes?
I do coaching, yes. I have some premium clients all over the world. I've worked with diplomats, New York Times bestselling author, therapists on TV, people who have gotten married through coaching, by the way. Don't discount coaching. You think a matchmaker is the only answer for you. It is not. Coaching is really important. Yeah. And then, yes, I've worked with people that I've matched where, you know, they've only met one person and they got married for the first time at the age of 60. Mm-hmm. And I've also had younger people in my practice that have gotten married, but that's my favorite story. I always talk about it. Yeah. But yeah, it's huge, because particularly for our community, women of color, we come from a background that a lot of this was not taught to us, right? Yeah. And even, and not just women of color, everybody, like they really should be teaching courses on relationships from your last year in high school all through college. That should be a required course, how to connect, how to have a healthy relationship, and how to purge yourself of all the nonsense that you've been acquiring for years. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So thank God for people like Candace and myself and a lot of the practitioners that I work with who are doing this work, because it's really important for us to have a harmonious world. There's so much turmoil right now. A lot of it stems from people who are just miserable in their marriages and their status or whatever, and then they're causing other misery for other people. So I really, really believe in this work.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Arlene. You have been fantastic. Hopefully you'll come back on the show again.
Oh, it would be my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Awesome. That's so good. All right. So if you, I noticed that on some of my other platforms, people might have been commenting because I was trying to like keep the notifications quiet, but they didn't come through on StreamYard. So if you did comment, just know that, you know, we'll be seeing the posts and we'll get back to you. And if you're watching the show later, please feel free to comment. Any of your feelings, things that come up, tell us about what your mom told you or what was modeled for you. And we'll definitely respond later on, you know, in the comments. And yeah, thank you everybody who came into the show while we were live and who comes later. Thank you again, Arlene, for being here. I can't wait to have you on again. I'm glad that we've now formed this friendship, this partnership, and that we're connected. And you can go to CandaceHarperLoveCoach.com if you want to sign up for my free weekly newsletter. Also, I'll send you a free copy of my ebook, 7 Days of Releasing Single Girl Shame, because you need to lose that shame. Be happy when you do create a relationship, because it will, that shame will follow you into a relationship, whether you're single or not. And that's it, my sweet loves. Until next time, keep being unapologetically lovable, and by all means, give yourself grace. Thank you so much. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Bye.